Welcome to the Spotlight. We have a very special guest today under the spotlight.
Yes, we do.
Let me tell you a little bit about him real quickly, and then he's going to tell you about himself. We just met David Henning a couple of weeks ago at a large conference in Atlanta. Bearship and I had a presentation on day two for Vantage Financial. And Dave is a partner and a member of that organization. And on the first day, the MC called up some high performers, and they all got a chance to speak for a few moments. And David was the only one really that seriously caught our attention. No disrespect to any of the others. But the reason was because he talked about the housing market, and he talked about some specific things that are going on in the world right now. And, you know, as a viewer of ours, you know, we do the very same thing. And Bearship leaned over and she goes, "I like this guy." And I said, "Yeah, I do too." And so then he came up and met us outside, and we've had several conversations since. And so welcome to the spotlight, David. Why don't you tell our viewers a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. First, I just want to thank you guys for having me on here. I really appreciate that, and giving me an opportunity to kind of talk about some of the things I'm really passionate about. So one of the things with me is I've been in financial services since 2007. And I'm an extremely conflicted person, okay? And what do I mean by that? If you ask anybody to describe me, okay, and my personality, anybody that knows me really well, they would say that David has the mind of a capitalist, but I have the heart of a social worker. All right. So I walk around trying to solve problems every day. And right now we have a massive pandemic. Okay. And I'm not talking about like a medical pandemic, but what we have is a financial pandemic. Okay. And people need to understand what's going on economically so that they can have a better life. You guys have probably seen on social media how many people are struggling. You know, a lot of people are struggling right now to even pay their basic necessities. And there's a storm coming. Okay. People don't understand the effect of inflation. Okay. Inflation is going to have a massive impact on our lifestyles. How many people do you see like are being affected by the cost of groceries?
True.
You know, eggs, milk, bread, you know, your basic necessities. How many people are being impacted by the cost of gasoline? How many people are being impacted by rising insurance costs for their homes? You know, and their mortgages have gone up. You know, interest rates have had a major impact on most people. So they need to be prepared for what's coming. And you see people talking about side hustles. You see people talking about ways to make more money. And most people are working two jobs, maybe three jobs, trying to raise a family at the same time. And that's a major struggle because people can't work a fourth job. You know, and one of the things I said that day when you were there is I was talking about, you know, the average house price is right around $450,000 right now. You know, and then the average household makes about $76,000 a year. And that's like an average household across the entire United States. The average income is $76,000. But the average expenditures are $86,000.
Wow.
So we're talking about a negative $10,000 difference in income versus expenses. So people are using credit cards. They're you know, getting into debt way above their head. And so that's a major pandemic that's coming that we need to help people get out of.
And David, let me ask you your opinion. My opinion and my observation is that you mentioned inflation. Isn't inflation really an indication of the devaluation of the U.S. dollar?
I mean, absolutely.
Isn't that what is actually every time we experience inflation, what we're really experiencing is the devaluing of the Fed. And it's not even the U.S. dollar. It's the Federal Reserve note, which is completely different. And we could spin off on that one. But yeah, so you agree with that, and I'd love to hear your opinion on that and why that's happening.
So inflation is being caused by the massive printing of money. Our government is increasing the debt constantly. And it all started when they took the dollar off the gold standard. There's nothing backing the dollar. It's just paper right now, and they're printing it to pay their bills. So if you equate what the government is doing with spending right now to our own personal lives, basically what it is you as an individual going out and using a credit card every single day to keep up with all your expenses. And this is happening right now. People are using credit cards to make up for that $10,000 difference they can't afford.
Right.
So if you continue to use a credit card beyond what you can afford cash wise, well, what happens to you down the road? Now, not only can you not afford everything that you needed to pay for, but now you have debt on top of it that you have to pay. So it just compounds the problem. So that's what's happening with inflation. Well, here's something I need to get across to everybody. They need to understand, because everybody thinks the government is there for us, right? That the government is there to help us. The government is not there to help us. The government is there to help themselves.
No
okay?
way.
So,
really?
Yes, absolutely, right? So they're creating problems, and then they're inserting themselves as the only solution.
Yeah.
Okay? So here's what happens with inflation. Inflation is bad for us, the people, but inflation is good for the government.
Yeah.
Now, think about that for a second. Most people don't get this. Okay. And I like to talk about it because people need to understand money. Inflation is good for the government.
Break that down for us.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll give you an example. I have a 17-year-old son who likes to eat. Okay. The kid eats a lot. We will go through like a dozen eggs in a week, no problem, just on him.
Oh my God.
So I buy my eggs in bulk. I go to Sam's Club and I buy eggs by the case, right? So it used to be I could walk into Sam's Club and I could buy a case of eggs for about $20.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys remember recently when you had the big spike in prices and everything? And those same eggs, the same case of eggs, went up to $63.
Holy crap.
Wow.
So that's some serious inflationary issues. So I go to the store. I buy the same thing. I get the same amount for a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's how inflation works. We're taxed on those goods, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, we're not taxed on the quantity of eggs I get. We're taxed on the price of the eggs I get. So I was taxed on $20 before. Now I'm being taxed on $60 for the same amount of goods. The government just got three times in taxes what I was paying for before for the same thing. So inflation, as the price of goods increases, the government collects more tax dollars for the same amount. I don't get more for my money. I get far less. Okay. But the government collects more revenue.
Yeah.
That makes total sense.
That's the effect of inflation, right? They collect more money for doing less.
Wow.
So inflation is good for the government. Now, on top of that, when there's inflation, okay, this is the economics nerd in me coming out, right? Yeah. When there's inflation, one of the tools that the government utilizes to bring inflation back down is interest rates.
Correct.
Right? When interest rates go up, it keeps people from being able to consume more, which hypothetically brings prices back down. But we all know prices very rarely ever come back down.
Correct.
Okay? Yeah.
So the government lends money to the banks. Well, when interest rates are higher, the government makes more money.
Yeah.
So we talked about the average household price was around $450,000. Now you take the higher price for that home and higher interest rates on the average mortgage, people cannot afford those homes anymore.
Mm-mm.
But the money that the government's giving to the banks to lend out, they're making a lot more in the Federal Reserve. So when they create these deficits, they have to make up that shortfall. They have to pay their bills also. The only way the government raises their money is by increasing taxation, and they can do it through inflation.
Wow.
And that's obviously rampant in today's world. So, you know, I was going to ask you, we've all heard that ignorance is not bliss, and we've just dispelled some ignorance here for some of us, with regard to what's going on with the government, inflation, the devaluation of the dollar, all those types of things. But mm-hmm. but ignorance is not bliss. It's ignorance. And it creates pain. In fact, the Hindus say that the greatest cause of suffering is ignorance. But ignorance can be cured. And so hopefully through education and awareness, we can help cure some ignorance. So all that to say, you're a professional in finance. It's obvious. You've already gotten a lot of credibility here in the first couple of minutes. What do you believe a lot of people are denying or suppressing or not seeing clearly in today's world, particularly from a financial perspective?
Absolutely. Ignorance is not bliss. You know, most people fail to confront their financial responsibility, right? They think if I just ignore it, it'll go away. And it won't. You have to like hit it head on, and you have to learn the rules to the money game. You know, we go through our entire life playing the money game, but most people don't know the rules. And if you've ever played any sports, any game at all, if you don't understand the rules, it's very difficult to win. You know, the one that understands the rules the best and knows how to leverage them, those are the people that are going to win. So I like to teach a thing I call the three rules of money. Okay. And these are super simple. It's nothing overly complicated, but if everybody just understands the three rules of money, they can get way ahead. And the first rule is called the rule of 72. It's called the rule of compound interest. So a lot of people like to Google the things I say. So I challenge everybody, Google everything I say, research it, right? Trust, but verify. Okay. Yeah. So the first rule of money is the rule of 72, the rule of compound interest. When you Google this, you're going to see a picture of Albert Einstein at the chalkboard. Mm-hmm. Now, Albert Einstein, as smart as he was, he didn't create this rule. He just said that this should be the eighth wonder of the world and everybody needs to learn it. Okay. So he said those that learn it will earn more money, while those that don't will end up paying more money. And I'll explain this very simply. You take that rule, which says if you take the rate of return you earn on your money and you divide it into the number 72, tells you how long it takes for your money to double. Okay. So most of us, where do we go to put our money away? Well, most people go to the bank, right?
Yeah.
And at the bank, they're going to offer you like 1% if you're lucky.
Yeah.
On a
right.
CD.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's just say you're a 29-year-old and you received a bonus from your job. Okay, so you got $10,000. You're like, hey, I just listened to that David guy on this podcast the other day. He says I need to save this money.
Yeah.
So what you do is you go down to the bank because that's what you know. You go down, you deposit $10,000, you get that 1%. Well, the rule of 72, one goes into 72, 72 times. He would be over 100 years old before that money doubled.
And he's probably not going to have any fun spending it at that point.
He'll have no fun, right? But look what happens if you just get a few extra percentage points. Now, let's just say you put it into a mutual fund. 40-year historical rate of return for mutual funds is about 6%. Okay? At 6%, your money doubles every 12 years. So from 29 to 65, he'll get a couple times of compounding in there. Mm-hmm. So at 6%, he'll have roughly $80,000 by the time he's 65 and he's ready to retire. Well, how long do you think $80,000 will last you in retirement?
In today's market, about maybe a couple months, maybe. by the time he's 69 or whatever the number was, probably not that long.
Yeah.
So I don't know about you guys, but when I went to college, I was a broke college student.
Yeah.
And we lived off this thing called the ramen noodle diet, right? So you're living on ramen noodles and then bologna sandwiches if you're lucky. So that
mine was mac and cheese. the microwave mac and cheese with the shaker packet cheese.
Oh my God.
Nasty. But anyway,
yeah, well, it's better than ramen, right? So what I do is I like to refer to that as the ramen noodle retirement. Mm. Okay. So nothing outstanding there. But what if you could just get a few more percentage points? So what if you were averaging 12% on your money? Well, now 12 goes into 72 every 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now when you get ready to retire at age 65, you have $640,000 from a $10,000 investment one time at age 29.
Mm. And the discipline to not pull it out and mess with it.
Touch it, right? But most of the time we have to continue to contribute. Well, I'm talking about $10,000 invested one time. You let it grow in an uninterrupted compound interest account. Mm-hmm. And now you have a decent retirement. But if you're 29 years old today, your full retirement age is probably going to be 72. So you get one more time of compounding. Now you've got about $1.3 million. Mm-hmm. But that's how it works for you, right? Rule of 72 works for you. Let me explain to you how it works against you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So do either of you have any idea what the average interest rate is on a credit card?
Today's world is 20. It's in the 20s.
Absolutely. It's, 18 to 24%, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now let's apply that rule, okay, against you. At 24% interest, your debt is doubling every 3 years.
Mm.
So we get into that debt trap and we're never able to get out because we can't keep up with the interest payments on our credit card.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening with our government right now with inflation, right? Like our government is so far in debt, they can't get themselves out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's bad. So that's the rule of 72. And the sad part is, you know, ignorance, like you said, is not bliss. Yeah. We're actually taught and conditioned to go into debt. Okay. And I'll give you the perfect example. When I went to college, right? Broke college student. You go in, the first thing you do is you talk to the guidance counselors. They help you pick your major, pick your courses, set everything up for those semesters that you have coming up. Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as you're done getting your schedule, you go down to the financial aid office. Now you got to pay for school, right? Yeah. So in financial aid, they're like, okay, David, you know, here's how much money you're going to need to pay for your tuition. But we're going to give you additional money for books. We're going to give you additional money to live off of because, you know, you're a student. So you got to focus on your studies. Yeah. You're like, okay, you know, we're 18.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Give me money. But we don't understand the consequences of that. Well, after you're told that it's okay to get financial aid to go to school, you go down to the bookstore to pick out all your books for those courses you just signed up for. Yeah. In front of the bookstore, there's a bunch of tables set up, American Express, Discover, Visa, MasterCard. And they're sitting there like, hey, David, you're a student, right? Yeah, like, yeah, I'm a student. Well, you're pre-approved for our credit card. Well, I'm a student. I don't have a job. I don't have any income. That's okay. You're pre-approved. Get the credit card. So you're like, really? And they're like, yeah, if you get this credit card right now, we're going to give you a $25 gift card for your books. So you're like, oh, I'm saving money. So you apply for the credit card. You go get your books. Here you are a week later. Your friends are like, hey, David, let's go out. We're going to go eat. I'm like, well, I don't have any money. But then you're like, hold on. I got this credit card from the bookstore, right? So now you go and you start spending money you don't have.
Yeah.
So we're told it's okay to go into debt. So we start accumulating debt from a very early age. So we don't want to do that. So the rule of 72, we're going to teach you how to earn money instead of paying money. We're going to get you ahead. The second rule of money is how does your money grow? Okay. So your money is going to grow either fixed, variable, or indexed. Fixed, again, is the bank example where you might get like 1% on your money, right? So do you want your money to grow fixed where you're not losing any money, but you're really not gaining any? Because if we're in hyperinflation, inflation is around 5, 6, 7%. You're earning 1%. You're slowly losing buying power.
Right.
You know, if you leave it in a CD for 5 years, 5 years from now, you know, that same $10,000 is going to buy you a lot less than it would today.
Yeah.
Well, you're like, okay, maybe I need to get a little bit more aggressive with my money. So how do you get more aggressive? You put it into the market. You might do crypto. You might do stocks. You can do mutual funds, your 401k. So here you're going to have more potential for gain,
mm-hmm.
but guess what else you have? You have potential for loss.
Right. Right.
Risk and reward, right?
Yeah.
And then the third option is a strategy called indexing. So an index strategy, there's actually an article that Warren Buffett did, and he's a huge advocate of using index strategies. He actually said he's not going to leave any money to his children or his grandchildren unless they use index strategies, because he knows he's one of the best investors of all time. But how many people can do what Warren Buffett does?
Not many.
Yeah.
So with an indexing strategy, you leverage the indexes. And here's a huge money tip, because a lot of people think they have to get a wealth manager to do their money. Okay. So you're going to pay a professional to manage your money. You're going to pay them like 2% on average. Well, did you know that only 8% of money managers outperform the indexes?
I did know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why are we paying somebody to manage our money when the indexes are much more efficient? So with an index strategy, we have the ability, as your money goes up, we can lock in the gains. As your money goes up, we lock in the gains. When the market goes down and it crashes like it did in 2008, you do not participate in those losses. So it's either like you can do a variable market, which I call the retirement roller coaster with all the ups and downs, and you just hope you retire at the right time. Mm. Or you can take that slow and steady staircase with an index strategy. And the third rule of money, and this is one that gets me a little heated. I get a little upset with this one, but it's how taxes work, right? And the government allows you to save in three different buckets. The first one is what we call tax now. So tax now, all that says is, you know, you've worked really hard for your money. You've already been taxed on it. So you paid income tax. You put it into the bank. Okay. This is your emergency fund, your liquid money. You put that money in the bank. Now, at the end of the year, okay, tax season, you get a thing called a 1099 INT in the mail. The government wants their cut of that 1% interest you earned on that money.
That's right. Tax on tax.
Then you get taxed again.
Right.
Then there's tax tax later, which is your traditional vehicle. This is what most people use, 401ks, IRAs, things like that. So you're going to get some tax benefit now. It reduces your taxable liability today. It grows tax deferred, which means no taxation as it grows. But most people don't realize this sets them up for a huge tax liability in retirement. Okay. So it's 100% taxed at whatever income bracket you're in.
And might I say too, it sets you up for a huge tax if the current regime continues, because that's what's being threatened, is continually increase the tax.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, they have to pay their bills, right? So the most efficient way for the government to raise money is through taxation. So do you realize right now we're pretty much at historical lows when it comes to tax brackets, right? Well, way back in like 1977, 78, the top tax bracket for top income earners was over 70%.
Wow.
Can you imagine paying 70% of your income?
Holy moly.
No, that's working almost all week long for the government.
Yeah.
It is. You know, there's a famous story about Ronald Reagan, right? Ronald Reagan used to be an actor before he got into politics.
Right.
And he said he would only do two motion picture movies a year, and he would make about $100,000 per movie. He said if he did a third movie earning another $100,000, it bumped him up into such a high tax bracket, he made less money net, you know, what he takes home by earning more money.
Yeah. Wow. I get it.
So that has an impact on a lot of people. And then the third bucket is called tax advantage. So there's a thing called a Roth IRA. There's investment grade life insurance. And another vehicle for this might be municipal bonds. Okay. These you're allowed to put money in after tax dollars. So you already paid the income tax, but when you withdraw that money later, when you need it, it's 100% tax free. So if I were to ask you guys today, do you think taxes are going to stay the same, go down, or go up in the future? What would you say?
Up? No.
Yeah.
Most sure. Likely it's going to go up. So why are we all utilizing a tax strategy today for a lower tax bracket in the future when we don't think that's where it's going?
Good point. Really good point.
Yeah.
So those are the three rules of money. So number one, you got to understand how your money grows, right? Or how you can gain more interest. Two, how does your money grow? And three, you have to understand taxes. And if you understand those three things, it's much easier for people to accumulate wealth.
So I would assume, given what you've just described, that you're not a big advocate or fan of Roth IRAs at all.
Well, no. I love Roths. I don't like traditional as much because, like, okay, so again, not a fan of the government, right? Have you ever taken the words V and the IRS and put them together?
The IRS.
No, no. I'm doing it in my head.
I'm trying. If you put V and IRS together, it spells theirs.
Theirs.
Oh.
That's right.
Right? The government's going to get there. So it's very important that we have a strategy that you control your tax rate, not the government. And I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what the tax rates are going to be in the future. But what I do is I blend the tax buckets together for my clients and get a good mixture that you can pick and choose where you access the money from to control your tax rate.
Interesting.
Wow.
Interesting. Really, yeah. Really great stuff. So, you know, we've talked quite a bit about the three rules. I almost called them laws. Three rules of finance and money.
They could be laws.
They could be laws. Universal laws of money and how it works. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to ask you another question, and maybe we'll move broader than money. I don't know, maybe not, because I know money is your game. But if you had to name, David, looking at what we're seeing in the world today, three of the most critical current affairs in our world, what would they be and why?
Well, I'm going to ask your permission to get into three things that we're always told not to discuss, right? Especially during holidays at the house.
You've got full permission, yeah. And we're probably on a similar page, but we'll see.
Okay. So I want to discuss money. Mm-hmm. I want to discuss religion, and I want to discuss politics.
Go for it.
Let's go.
And they all tie together, right?
Yes.
So one of the most misquoted things in the Bible is people will always use the excuse that money is the root of all evil for their lack of success with money. The Bible doesn't say that, right?
That's right.
It doesn't, but that's what people say. So that's why I say it's one of the most misquoted things. It is the love of money that is the root of all evil.
That's right.
Okay. People need to understand money is a tool. Money in the hands of good people can do fantastic things.
Yeah.
Money in the hands of evil people can do horrific things.
Mm-hmm.
Money is a tool. So we just got to understand how to use it. Okay. So we got to understand how to use it effectively. So money, the Bible teaches us everything we need to know about money. You can use scripture to be successful with money. All right. So we'll talk a little bit about money. The other issues in the world right now is look at all the division being created. Okay, there's tons of division in this world. They're trying to separate us based on our religions.
Yeah.
You know, this religion hates this religion, and everybody's just trying to tear each other apart. And I blame politics for a lot of it. I don't care if you're Republican. I don't care if you're Democrat. I always say I'm not political. What I am is I'm a fiscal conservative. I talk about money policy all the time because money dictates how successful the population in general can be.
Mm-hmm.
Poor policy decisions can affect how we live.
Yeah.
Okay. And as I mentioned earlier, politicians create problems so that people think that the politicians are the only ones that can fix it.
Yeah.
And then they provide a solution.
Yeah.
They create a problem, then they provide a solution. Vaccine. deadly virus vaccine or we could go on and on, but that's a real pertinent and proximate example.
Yeah. But I mean, look at all of the policies that are coming out. Okay. Mm-hmm. And some of the, I understand. And this is why I say I'm not really, Republican, Democrat. I can relate to both parties and what they're trying to do, but mm-hmm. it's people interjecting things into what everybody's trying to accomplish that creates the division. You know, so, you know, if you look at people that are Democrats, typically they want to do good things and help people that are struggling. Again, the social worker in me, I want to help everybody and I want to see everybody win.
Yeah.
OK, the capitalist in me, I want to see everybody understand money. I'm all for entrepreneurship. I'm for people, you know, basically, you know, like once you hunt, you know, what you kill, what you hunt is what you get.
Yeah,
so right. I think people need to work hard and get what they deserve, okay? Mm-hmm. But I also want to help everybody. So there's a balance in there. And you notice most of the talking points right now are these talking points that are created and put out on social media.
Yeah.
They're getting everybody fired up, everybody divided, when we should all be coming together. And if we unite, we can solve all of the world's problems.
Yeah.
Correct.
You know, and so I watch what's going on. And okay, so this is a red pill, blue pill moment, right? You guys saw The Matrix.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Many
times. You take the blue pill, you can go back to your world, right? And everything is just how it was. You take the red pill, you learn all these things, and you can never put it back.
Yeah.
So I study numbers. I'm an economics nerd. And I watch things that happen. There was a movie that came out about these guys on Reddit who discovered what a bunch of these hedge fund guys were doing. Mm-hmm. They were these hedge fund guys trying to make billions of dollars off of misfortune. Okay. So they shorted the stock for AMC Theaters and they shorted the stock for GameStop. Well, this guy gets out there and he's like, hey, let's show everybody the power of what people can do. And he united everybody on Reddit and said, we're going to go out there and we're going to buy GameStop and we're going to buy AMC. So mm-hmm. if you understand the markets and what they did is these hedge fund guys shorted the stock, okay, on those two companies. When you short a stock, what you're doing is you're selling stock you don't own with the anticipation that that stock price is going to fall. Yeah. Right. So you took all the profits from the sale already. Mm-hmm. Now when the prices fall, you actually go and buy it, and then you make those people take those stocks at a loss.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So this guy gets a hold of it. He says, well, these guys don't own the stock. Let's drive the price up and stick it to them. So now the population, now they make the money because they drove the price up. And yeah. the hedge fund guys, they had to put in a stop order on all of this because they couldn't meet the margins anymore. If you watch the movie, you'll see these billionaires lost billions when wow. this happened. But all of the people made a lot of money.
Interesting.
Okay. So mm-hmm. if people understand the power we have, okay, we can actually facilitate change.
Yes, true.
So what happens is there's a narrative, right? These hedge fund guys do all these different things. So they're driving up our deficit right now. Record deficit is being created.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do they want to do? They want to create something called a central bank. If you devalue the dollar so much, right, you have to create a digital currency to make up for it.
Mm, yeah.
So everything, like, it may not make sense to us, but it makes sense to somebody what they're doing. Like, you're like, why would the government do this? Why would they have record inflation? Why would they have record spending? Yeah. Well, it doesn't make sense to the people, but it makes sense to some people.
Yeah.
Do you believe that there is a controlling effort to intentionally crash the system?
Yes, I believe there is an intentional effort right now to bring about a different system that they want to usher in certain people. There's just way too many coincidences. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, right? But if you have way more than enough coincidences, it starts to make sense, right?
Yeah.
You know, Leonardo da Vinci said mm-hmm. there's three types of people. Those who see when you show them, and those who will never see, even when you show them.
Yeah.
And there's still some people in category three in today's world because, I mean, I understand it's hard to look at our country, and obviously there's people worldwide that are experiencing the same thing. But if we can just talk about, you know, I grew up in this country and it's very hard to look at and say, hey, all the things I was conditioned to believe about my government, about my media, about all the my opportunities, about my rights, mm-hmm. all my freedoms are maybe not correct. And it's world shattering. And you know my story, Dave. I mean, one of the great gifts I was given through catastrophe was that it totally destroyed my world model and caused me to step back and look at things differently. So I was in category one, two, those who see when you show them. But there's a lot of people who are still in category three. It's all around us. And there's still, it's really hard to swallow that and understand that. And I'm saying that because you said you're not a conspiracy theorist, and we believe that to be true, and neither are we. But if you're awake and you look at what's going on, that goes back to our ignorance conversation, then how can you not see what's happening?
Yeah. What we have to do is take an objective view of everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. We have to quit trying to come up with what we want to see, which will shape what we see, right? So again, it's the blue pill versus the red pill. Ignorance is not bliss. So the blue pill is that ignorance, right? We want to be ignorant of what's going on so we don't have to face the reality. It's the same thing with our finances, right? We go through our finances. We don't want to see what's going to happen to us. So we just kind of blindly keep going through everything. So most people are choosing to take the blue pill right now and not see what's really happening. There was a TED Talk I saw one time. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the one guy gets on the TED Talk and he said his whole life he had been very left-leaning and very liberal. And he said he had a conversation with somebody else who was right-leaning, and the two actually had a conversation. And he started to see a lot of the validity in his points and realized how many things he was being told that wasn't factually correct.
Right.
So he went and did a social media experiment and tried to see the other viewpoint. And he said all the social media with all the algorithms and the analytics kept drawing him back to the same viewpoint he had. He had to wipe all the social media clean, start fresh, so he could actually see the other viewpoint.
Yeah.
And I'm saying social media does it on both sides, right?
Yeah.
If they see the algorithm on one side, they're going to keep leaning you further and further right or further and further left.
Yeah.
And you don't get to see what the other side sees. My whole life, I've spent trying to see everybody's viewpoint. So I study and I learn, but most of us don't get that opportunity.
Even Google does that, not just social media, but obviously, you know, any of our viewers who go on Google and type in, you start typing before you even done typing, you have a list of things that they're recommending based upon what they know about you
or what they heard you say on your phone
or what they heard you say on your phone. You know, I mean, Google and Facebook are great. They're free. They're not free.
No,
they have every bit of data and information about you that you can imagine. And so that's what you're paying to use these quote free services.
Yeah.
You mentioned central bank and CBDC, also known as central bank digital currency. I'd love to hear your opinion on that because I have some pretty strong opinions on that.
Man, I gotta be real careful what I say here, but absolutely. I think there's a progression coming where everything is going to be digital. The dollar is going to be gone. You know, the paper is not worth the paper they printed on. Right.
Yeah.
And again, we had that conversation a little while ago about how hedge fund people work and how the markets can be influenced.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things going on, and be very careful who you listen to, because, people are just trying to manipulate you in a way. Okay. So I'll give you an example. What if you were the CEO of a major financial institution and you understand that this digital currency is coming, but you want to buy the majority of it? Do you want to buy it when it's at a premium price, or do you want to buy it on sale?
On sale for sure.
Yeah.
On sale. So you go out in the marketplace and you start bashing it, saying, hey, this isn't going to work. It's horrible. Don't get involved with it. Don't buy it. You know. And so what happens is all those people that listen to you because you're supposedly the expert, now it causes a fire sale. Everybody gets out of it. The price bottoms out.
Yeah.
That is your opportunity to come in and buy at the bottom and buy it all up on sale and now limit it to everybody else. So now it becomes a premium.
Right. Right.
So I'll give you a good example of what I'm talking about. I personally don't like to buy stock for any of my clients. Okay. And whenever there's a big hit coming out, like when Facebook did their IPO, right? Everybody was calling me and they're like, David, buy Facebook, buy Facebook, buy Facebook. And I'm like, I am not buying Facebook for you. And they're like, well, we think it's going to be fantastic. I said, it might be. It might make you a fortune, but I am not going to facilitate that sale. They're like, why not? I said, well, with my licensing, I have to charge you to sell you that stock. And I said, let me explain how an IPO works, initial public offering. In the beginning, it goes out to institutional investors first, okay? So here you are, you're going to have to buy it from them. You're going to pay a premium for that stock. Initially, after the IPO, you know, once you paid a premium, it will drop drastically. So you're going to lose a lot of money in the beginning, and it might be the best stock you ever buy, and it's going to go through the roof, right? But what if it's not? In a few years, you're going to remember, hey, David bought this stock for me, and you're going to blame me for that purchase. And I said, I might make $100 on that stock purchase. You can go to any one of these online stock trading companies and buy the same thing yourself for $7.
Right.
And it removes me from the equation, right? I'd rather be the relationship guy and be there for you. I don't want you to remember me for making a bad decision. But the institutional investors are always the ones that win, you know? And so the consumer is usually the one that loses because, you know, in the market, somebody has to win, you know, or somebody has to lose for somebody else to win.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that Facebook thing, exactly what I said would happen, would happen. It, the price went way up. People bought it at a premium. Then the price went down and it had to come back.
Yeah.
So that's what's going to happen with all of our digital currencies. You're going to watch, like, you know, it's going to go up and then it's going to fall. And all of the institutional people, the big buyers, are going to have an opportunity to get in low. And then you're going to see the price go way back up. And then people, human nature, we have FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. Okay. So in the beginning, we have fear when it's crashing because, you know, we're like, oh, this is horrible. It's horrible. So you don't get in at the right time. Then it goes way up. And you're like, oh, man, this thing's going to keep going. It's going to keep going. I need to make my money. So you get in at the top and then you lose your money.
Right.
Okay. And so that's basically how most things work. But if you understand how it works and you buy and sell at the right times, you'll be okay. But usually it's the big money people that are capitalizing on this and they're manipulating the market.
Wow.
Can I tell you, you know, let me be really dicey here with regard to CBDC. Let's call it the Canada move. And I'm sure you've heard what happened to a lot of people in Canada. My concern, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, is that if we have a CBDC, central bank digital currency, that total control is with the central bank. And so, you know, if we're not conspiracy theories here, but we have to see things clearly, if there is the prospect, which there is, of social credit score or you know, all the environmental issues and all those things, and heaven forbid that we don't toe the line and fit in with the controlling narrative. My concern is that it's you can't put a digital currency under your mattress, and I don't believe that that's a wise thing to do potentially anyway, but that your bank account could be shut down. And this is coming from a couple who has had 3 bank accounts shut down. Because just like that, you know, when my life went south in 2009, my bank, who loved me just weeks before, literally the president of the bank, CEO, came to my office telling me he'd give me a line of credit with, you know, for millions of dollars and all these things. And then just like that, my bank account shut down. I said, hey, wait a second. I've been with you forever. Yeah, well, we just don't want your business anymore. So I have some backstory on this. And Bearship has been through that with me. So I'd love to hear your opinion on that with regard to the CBDC and what the potential is there and what we should be aware of.
Yeah, it's in my opinion, a lot of this is just about being able to control everything. Look, you know, you mentioned Canada. Look what happened in Canada with the truckers.
Right.
You know, they were trying to protest, you know, and what they felt in their opinion was something that was unfair.
Yeah.
Well, what did the government do to control them? They shut down all of their bank accounts,
mm-hmm.
right? There are already social programs in countries like China where they can shut down your bank accounts if you don't believe the same things they believe. You know, there's a lot of stuff. A good example is a friend of mine has a very, very successful Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he monetizes it and he makes his income off of that page. And he has trouble sleeping at night because Facebook can shut down his page at any time.
Yeah.
And if they shut down his page for anything, he just lost all of his income.
Mm.
Right?
We've had 3 social media accounts shut down too. Yeah. So our heart goes out to him. We understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in a world where a lot of people are social media influencers, right? It's probably one of the fastest growing professions out there where people are making an income. Yeah. But it's scary when somebody else controls your source of income. They can shut you down at any moment. Now, that's exactly what they're doing with their monetary system. If they control all the digital currency, if governments control the digital currency, they can shut us down at any time. Imagine going through your entire life being fearful of losing everything you have.
Yeah.
So what, in your opinion, do we do, for lack of a better term, to hedge, to protect and to be awake with regard to these things?
Is there anything?
Good question. Is there anything, in your opinion?
Well, the main thing is we have to unify the people. Like, people need to be on the same page to see what's going on and then to oppose what's happening, right? You have to make sure that we have the right people in place that are going to represent our interests, not big government's interest.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing we can do, because if it happens, we really don't have much control.
Yeah. That's
correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, though, we tend to forget how powerful we really are, because, you know, with 8 billion people on the planet, the number of people who are potentially doing evil with money. You mentioned this way back. You know, you can do a lot of good things with money and power, and you can do a lot of evil. Yeah. And the people who are doing evil and propagating those kind of things are a very small percentage by comparison to the total population. And so we have a tremendous amount of power. We really do.
Yeah.
And it's just time to take it back.
Mm-hmm.
And all the things you're sharing, David, are one of that's what we gleaned from you when you were on stage. We're like, this guy is not
all 5 minutes.
All of 5 minutes. Yeah. And now we've been here for a while, but we were right in our assessment, because so many people, unfortunately, appear to have blinders on, and they're just like, hoorah, 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 you know, everything's great. Let's just keep on business as usual. And I just don't believe we can do that. We can't do that.
No.
You know, we have to be awake, and we don't live in fear, because there are powers in this universe that want us to be in fear. And you mentioned the Bible. The Bible says you have not been given a spirit of fear. You've been given the spirit of sonship. And so when we are in fear, we don't make good decisions, and we're not resourceful, and we're not resilient, and we give our power away. Oh, protect me and save me. And we saw this happen in spades in 2020. You know, Beersheba and I, we have a lot of experiences from 2020. And for us, it really wasn't that bad. We were on a podcast recently, and the host said, you know, some people, the younger generation, Gen Z and maybe millennials, their significant emotional event was 2020, COVID, but because they'd really never been through anything like that or even close to it up to there. And so it's apparent to me that things have at minimum accelerated since 2020. Do you think that these things we're talking about, David, are new issues since 2020, or do you believe it goes back further than that?
It goes back way further than that. It's just today's age, we're in the information age. Like, everything, once it happens, it's out there on social media. It's out there broadcasted to the world immediately. People are just more aware of everything that's going on. All this has been going on for centuries. You know, it's just we're more hyper aware of what's happening.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you mentioned the disconnect from the gold standard. That happened all the way back in 71 with Nixon. And that shifted things dramatically. Dramatically.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no tangible asset attached to the U.S. I shouldn't say U.S. It's not U.S. Look at your dollar. It says Federal Reserve Note at the top. It doesn't say U.S. dollar. It's a product of the Federal Reserve. And yet there were things even prior to that, I believe. I mean, you could go back to the Kennedy assassination and many other things. So here's what I'd love to hear your opinion on. What are some practical things? And maybe you've already discussed some of them. You certainly have. You've been very practical in your approach. But what are some practical things that you, people like you and me and Beersheba, can do to impact all these issues that we've discussed today?
Number one, I would say simplify your life, right? If you have debt, get rid of debt. Own as much as you can without any obligations, right? And basically design your life that you're not as dependent upon the government and everybody else as possible, right? You want to create as much autonomy as you can. Because if you have autonomy, you have less fear. Now, if you have less fear, they have less control.
True. Yeah. Do you have chickens and cows and a vegetable garden?
Oh, well, I'm in Florida. Florida's a little hard to do that. But
the gators make it tough.
Yeah. So we have gators. We have gators. So we can do that. We can go fishing. But, you know, so at least have some water, you know, on your land.
Yeah.
And you can go fishing. Yeah, I mean, just become as self-sufficient as you possibly can, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that we can do, but just the biggest thing, again, it goes back to ignorance is not bliss. Knowledge, research, study, learn. The information is out there if you seek it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be lazy right now.
Yeah.
You know, don't be lazy. Spend the time to educate yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really, really good advice. Mm-hmm. Beersheba and I were guests on a podcast in, we flew up to
Montana,
Big Sky Country. And it was a big podcast. And the host really had a good opinion on this, because when you say be autonomous, I'm the last guy in the world that's going to grow a garden. I don't, you know, I have a hard time keeping the plants alive in our house.
I can't imagine that.
I'd like to be able to do that, but, you know, it's hard to be autonomous when it comes to food.
Mm-hmm.
If we're totally dependent on the grocery stores. Well, we have friendships with a local farmer, mm-hmm. and that kind of dovetails into what his point was. He said, if you're not the kind of person that is really good at certain things because you have gators that come into your property, for instance, and they're gonna, you don't want to be, you don't want to be, you know, picking oranges while the gators are coming at you. Then what you do, and this was brilliant and it really struck me, is you form alliances with people who are,
yeah.
and you build a network.
Mm-hmm.
Of people who are good at finance, for instance, who are good at farming. We buy local, you know, our beef and our eggs and all that from our local farmer. We know his name, and yeah. You know, we talk to him as a regular person, and so if you can build those networks, that's a big thing, I believe, and it goes back to what you mentioned earlier. There's so much division in the world and so much siloing, if yeah. you will. Division in the name of unity. You know, I want to accept everyone.
Except for you.
And I want to accept you as long as you agree with me.
Yeah.
You know, if you agree with me, then I accept you.
Yeah.
And if you don't, not so much. But I think you're right. Autonomy is a great word,
yes.
and it's a great concept, and it's greatly applied when it's applied.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had some challenging times in your life, and maybe we'll finish up with this. You've been very generous with your time. Tell us about a challenging time in your life. We always like to finish with this, and what you learned or gained from it.
Yeah.
So I will start this by saying I am a very blessed individual, okay? I've been blessed to have some amazing associations in my life. I've been blessed to have some great mentorship in my life. And I've had people who have helped me think clearer, okay? So one of the things I learned early on was adversity happens for you, not to you.
Mm,
true.
Okay? So if you always seek the blessing from it, you'll learn from it, right? Too many people get caught up as a victim in their adversity and they never get out of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned your friends that, you know, in 2020. And 2020 was probably one of the most difficult times in my life. I actually died twice.
Wow.
So that's some adversity, right? In 2020, I had a massive cardiac arrest.
Wow.
Okay. And I had no symptoms. I didn't know what was happening. Basically, what happened is we had gone out to Texas to go visit my parents. We came back home from shopping. Last thing I remember is getting out of my car. Somehow, I had made it about 20 to 30 feet into the house, and I collapsed. And I went head first. And that's how I got this scar right here. And this is why I say I'm blessed. I collapsed. I had no heart rate, no breathing. Clinically dead. When we walked in the house, my wife had gone left into the guest room. My daughter was in front of me. My daughter watched me fall. Okay. So if you've ever had what I had, the Widowmaker, they say if it's not observed, you will not survive. Okay. So if I did not feel good and I would have gone into the guest room and just taken a nap, said, hey, I don't feel good, I'm going to go take a nap, I probably would have taken a nap and never woken up.
Wow.
But I went head first, boom, hit the floor. My daughter started screaming. My wife hears her screaming, comes running out. My dad was in front of me, but he thought I just fell and hit my head and knocked myself out. Okay. So number one, my daughter observed it. Number two, my wife came running out, because if it was just my dad, he thought I was unconscious. My wife is a cardiac nurse. And so she sprung into action, checked, no heart rate, no breathing, no nothing. Her natural skills just went into action. And she started to kind of tell everybody what to do. My oldest son was right there. He was 14 at the time. She says, go outside, see if you can find any help. So he goes outside. She screams at my dad, call 911. So he's on the phone with 911 trying to tell him what's going on. My son comes back in with these two guys. They were working out doing landscaping. My wife looks at these guys and she's like, okay, what are they going to do? Like, you know, how can they help? And the one guy looks at her. He goes, listen, he goes, I know what's going on. He goes, I actually work in the ER. I was just here helping my son today. So he knew how to do CPR. So my wife is breathing for me. He's doing chest compressions. And so I'm like unconscious for so long that my wife and him were getting tired. My wife continued to breathe for me, but the guy that came to the house to help couldn't do it anymore. So my wife told my 14-year-old son on the spot, I'm going to teach you how to do CPR. And so he learned to do chest compressions on the spot, and they kept everything going until the paramedics got there. Paramedics come in, they paddle me, they bring me back. Okay. They load me up in the ambulance. They take me to the hospital. This is in the middle of COVID, right? So they take me to the hospital. I'm in the ER. My wife, my family cannot be in there. So the doctor is on the phone with my wife while I'm in the ER. And she's going, the doctor is telling her, she goes, we're going to prep him. And tomorrow we're going to take him for open heart surgery.
Tomorrow.
Wow.
Tomorrow, right? The next day they were going to take me in for emergency open heart surgery. All of a sudden, the doctor starts yelling, like curse words. And my wife's like, what's going on? What's going on? He's like, I got to go. I got to go. She goes, no, you tell me what's going on. And they said, he coded again. So all of my heart functions, everything stopped. And he's like, we got to take him up for surgery right now. Well, because of the change in the situation, they couldn't do the open heart surgery the next day. They had to take me up and they did an experimental surgery on me. Okay. So it turns out I had three arteries that were 100% blocked.
Wow.
And I have four stents that, like, some of them are going in opposite directions. Okay. So it's weird what they did to me. So they also had to put me into a coma for a week. Okay. To let my heart heal and everything else. So I was in this induced coma while my heart healed. Well, a week later, they woke me up and I have like these nurses all by the bedside and the doctor. And of course, since I had no oxygen, no heart rate, they had to make sure that I was actually, you know, functioning mentally. So they woke me up and I'm kind of groggy. And he said, okay, do you know where you are? I'm like, nope, have no idea. They said, what's the last thing you remember? I said, getting out of my car. And they're like, what's your name? What's your date of birth? Who's the president? All these things. And I was able to answer all of those questions. And it's only because I'm married to a cardiac nurse that did all the things that she did to keep me alive.
Wow.
and she kept my brain function going. And like, you know, I didn't really realize what I was feeling, but when you have three arteries blocked, you're not getting all your oxygen and everything to the brain. So I was having like brain fog before that. Didn't know what was causing it. But now my arteries were open. I was like clear as day. I was doing well. But the doctors asked me all those questions. And again, my wife could not be in the hospital with me. The only thing she had, and I have pictures from it, is they would take an iPad and hold it over and take pictures of me or do video of me while I was unconscious in a coma. And that's all my wife had. So like that whole week, she was just praying that I was going to be okay because nobody knew what was going to happen to me. Yeah. And actually there was, I do a lot of work with churches and there was prayer chains going all over the world. So anybody says prayer doesn't matter, they're wrong. Prayer absolutely matters. And I came back and they were smart enough to know that I was going to be a little out of it when they woke me up. So they had my phone right next to the bed and they allowed me to FaceTime with my wife when I woke up. So she could, you know, I had a familiar face and she was telling me what was going on. And so I talked to her for a little bit and I was like really tired, just getting woken up. And I went back to sleep for a little while. And when I woke up, I immediately grabbed my phone and I looked at it. And there was thousands of messages on my phone from all the people that I've had associations with in my life saying, hey, David, it's not your time. You know, you've made such an impact in our life that we know there's a lot more people for you to make an impact for. And I'm listening to all these messages, message after message after message. And something that happened to me about 15 years prior is I lost one of my best friends. He passed away. And when he passed away and I went to his funeral, it impacted me a lot because I watched the entire funeral home be packed wall to wall with all the people that wanted to pay respects to him. And I knew what an impact he made and what a legacy he left. And the doctor comes back into my room and it made me reflect on that because I'm like, this dude did not ever get a chance to know the impact he left for other people. And most of us will pass away not knowing how we impacted everybody. So I got the biggest blessing in the world because I was brought back from death and I got to see exactly what I did for other people. I got to see what my legacy was. And so when I woke up and I had seen all those messages, the doctor comes into my room and he goes, David, he goes, when would you like to schedule your appointment with the counselor? I'm like, counselor? He goes, yeah, we usually schedule you with a psychologist after something like this happens. I'm like, why? He goes, well, most people that go through a traumatic incident like you just did are very depressed. They're very suicidal. Oh, I said, I'm like, no need. I'm good, doc. He goes, what do you mean you're good? I said, I'm blessed. He goes, how are you blessed? You know, he goes, you just had two massive cardiac arrests. You're in for like, you know, you're going to be in the intensive care unit for like another couple weeks. You're going to be in the regular hospital for a couple weeks after that. And then you got to go to rehab. How are you blessed? I said, let me show you, doc. And I showed him all the video messages, everything was going on. And I said, I'm blessed because I have purpose. And I said, you tell me what I need to do to get out of here and I'm out of here. Right. So instead of being in ICU for so long, I got out of the ICU in 3 days. The physical therapist, okay, they actually had to slow me down. Because they put this belt around you and they have you walk around, you know, to kind of regain your balance and relearn everything. So he's like, and I'm pulling him along. And he's like, dude, you got to slow down. I said, nope, you got to speed up. Right. I said, I'm doing this. I'm getting out of here. And I did everything in my power. Everything they challenged me with, I did to get out of that hospital. And then I did everything I could to get out of the rehab. What was supposed to take me 3 to 4 weeks in rehab, I got out in a week.
Wow.
You know, I was doing every exercise, everything they challenged me to do, and I would do it twice. And they're like, okay, we got to get you out of here. And I'm like, yes, you do. I said, I got purpose. I got people I got to talk to. I got to get back out there and I got to make a difference. Wow. So I went through all those challenges, but I am the most blessed individual because I know what my purpose is. I know what my legacy is. I know what I'm going to go do. Most people never get an opportunity to see the impact that they leave on this world.
Yeah.
And I have.
Wow.
See, what I told you I like this guy.
Yeah. What an amazing story.
Holy moly. David.
What an amazing story. And wow. I would just say, with all due respect to your wife and there, you know, and her keeping you alive and doing what she did, there's pretty obviously to me anyway, some divine intervention there as well, with the fact that she had that background and some random guy out in your yard or neighbor's yard knew how to do CPR and on and on and on. You know, if you'd have laid down and taken a nap, on and on. So it wasn't your time. And that's a very strong and compelling story.
Yeah.
I think, were you wiping your eyes?
He got me all.
he got her a little emotional.
Wow.
So, David, thank you so much. I mean, we could talk for days, and I know that we're going to stay in touch. How do our viewers find your work and get in touch with you if they are interested in benefiting from the things that you do?
Yeah, I'll give you the easiest way to get a hold of me. If you go onto my Instagram, which is David Henning Mindset, you get a little glimpse of all the things I try to teach. But all my contact information is right on there. So just go on there, follow me, and then you can click on the link and you can reach out and get a hold of me. Anything I can do to help anybody out, I'm there.
Perfect.
Yeah,
I'll put it up too.
Yeah, we'll put that. Yeah. It, if you're viewing this recording right now, it's below.
Yeah.
It's right below David Henning Mindset. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for being you.
Yeah.
God bless you. Keep doing great work, David. And we look forward to strengthening and developing our relationship together as we move forward. So God bless.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
Thank you.